You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
We spend our whole lives wishing.
You're listening to Tony Telecasts from The Ensemblist, the only podcast that shows you Broadway from the inside out. I'm Aaron Albano.
And I'm Mo Brady.
But it's they who need to change.
The way they think, that is.
Yes.
Welcome, listeners, to our mini-series about the Tonys, bringing you all the drama behind the drama of a theater season in Broadway history.
In each podcast episode, we watch a telecast of a previous Tony Awards. Not only the performances, but the opening and the speeches to see how it reflects the season as a whole. So let's dive back in and talk about the 2009 Tony Awards.
Woohoo!
Let your freak flag.
Our first performance by a nominated musical is Shrek. What's up, Duloc?
What's up, Duloc?
Aaron, what's up, Duloc? Take it away.
Okay, so it starts with a lead-in scene featuring Brian D'Arcy James, Sutton Foster, and Daniel Breaker all in costume, and they like set the stage for the number. And it's a pretty long scene.
It's jokes, right? They're doing air quotes
about Farquaad. That's his name. Because the whole scene is about telling Fiona about who Farquaad is. Because she's like, tell me all about him. And they just tell short jokes the whole time. Which I was like, did we need this? I can't decide. Or should we have just led straight into the number?
It's the weirdness that we've already seen these three actors in costume for their component of the opening number when they did Freak Flag. Yeah. So they're already there. They already got a check.
So might as well use them.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I could think of maybe using them was that you see someone that looks like Shrek from the animated film or Fiona, and you're like, oh, this is that thing I like because these people look like the people I know.
Oh, fair. Because they're the most love Farquaad and love Christopher Seaber, but he's not the most recognizable character in this property.
And yet is nominated.
Well, yeah, but so is Brian D'Arcy James, so...
And so is Sutton Foster.
So we're good to go.
Did you see Shrek? I've never seen Shrek.
I didn't see Shrek live. I was a dick actor at that point and was like, ugh, why is Hollywood invading Broadway? And then...
Hey, wait, remind me what show you made your Broadway debut in?
Not a Hollywood show, a Bollywood show, thank you.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Mr. Bombay Dreams is putting the smackdown on Shrek the Musical.
Sure.
That's a high horse you're on.
I mean, Aaron. Hey, that high horse was born and bred at CCM, so let's not... But, so I was too stuck up to watch Shrek. And then years later, I discovered that it was on Netflix, which it's still on Netflix. So you should watch it on Netflix. And I just on a whim, I turned it on and was like, wait, this was Shrek? It's fantastic. The show is really great.
Wait, what? It's really great? I've never seen it. I've already said that.
Yes.
It's good.
It's wonderful. Go watch it on Netflix. It's on Netflix. They did a live cap of the show. And it is on Netflix, and you should watch it. And all of the listeners should watch it, too, if you've never heard it or seen it. It's wonderful.
Is this Tony Award performance a good representation of the show? Is it a good commercial for Shrek the Musical?
I think it is. Because the movie itself, like, the movie is, like, pure comedies and send-ups. This is definitely, it shows you that we're in the world of the movie, both in sort of environment and timbre.
Hmm. I thought it was fine. I thought this was perfectly fine. It did not make me want to buy a ticket.
As everything is. It's better in context. But I think it's generally a good performance for them to, especially, and I guess we'll get here too, because they did Freak Flag in the opening, I think this is a good sort of also performance.
Yeah, but for some reason I didn't count Freak Flag in the opening as like a commercial for Shrek.
Sure.
I don't know why.
I mean, I didn't either. But I think in terms of pre-production... If you think, oh, what two performances can we do?
These were the only two numbers you could do?
You could do the opening of Act Two.
Aaron Albano, Shrek historian.
But also to support Chris Seaber.
Yeah.
I think Chris Seaber was a favorite to win, so they were campaigning hard for him.
Got it.
You should watch it on Netflix.
Fine. Stop yelling
at me. Brady would love it. That's why I'm going to get you to watch it.
West Side Story, Dance at the Gym. This is a good cut of West Side Story.
This is a great cut of West Side.
Mm-hmm. I never get tired of listening to this music or watching this choreography. Like, this is good music. This is good storytelling. This is good dancing.
They are clean.
This is some good dancing.
Yeah. They are all, like, some of my favorite dancers in the business are in this revival.
Names. Names. We want names, Aaron Albano.
I mean, okay, just to name a few, we got Curtis Holbrook in there. We got Mikey Winslow in there. We got Ryan Steele, who's my favorite dancer of all time ever on Broadway in anything he does. We have Peter Cherson, who's equally as flawless as Steele. We have Manny Herrera, again, also equally. See, just flawless, flawless dancers. It's like obnoxious how flawless these people are.
It's good dancing.
And so get them all in one revival of this iconic choreography. Like, forget about it. It was thrilling. It was great. It was the perfect way to feature the show. I don't know if they feature their nominees very well, but at this point I was like, but you're featuring the show and the show is what we're going to go see.
Oh, it's a fantastic commercial. Like, here in 2020 watching it, it made me like, oh gosh, I really want to see the movie. I really want to watch, like...
Oh, the new movie?
Yeah, I really want to see the Spielberg movie and watch, like, current best of the best dancers
dance
to the score. Uh-huh. So the 2009 performance was a really good ad for the 2021 movie.
Yeah, it was fun. It was wonderful. No notes.
No notes.
No notes for this clean, iconic performance.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
And then we get to Rock of Ages.
Not a clean performance.
What do you think? Like, it's, I mean, on one hand, it's not supposed to be clean. It's Rock of Ages.
No.
Go.
I like Rock of Ages. Is it my favorite show? No. Has it ever been in my top 10? No. Have I seen it 5 times and enjoyed myself every single time? Yes. Right. I think that Rock of Ages is a fucking fun show. And this is a great cast. It's a great cast. It's a great number, right? Like, we have a great ensemble here. We're featuring original company of West Side Story includes Jeremy Jordan as a swing, yes. Bahia Heba, Jeremy Woodard, Savannah Wise, Smash alum, Erica Hunter. I fell in love with Erica Hunter head over heels. She did that thing with the firecracker popsicle and she was like milking the audience for... It was brilliant. It was really brilliant.
It's great.
I will get on a Rock of Ages and an Erica Hunter train whenever you want me to.
Work!
This song is a bop. The choreography is just right for the story. The vocals are good.
Yes, I like this. This is wonderful. This is fantastic. I'm not sure why this was ever on Broadway. And I watched it and I loved it.
It's nothing but a good time. How can I resist?
Fair. It doesn't claim to be anything else. So here we are. There is room for all here on Broadway.
I think that when we're talking about jukebox musicals and we have a Jersey Boys and we have a Beautiful and we have all, you know, we have an All Shook Up. We have all of these different, we have a Cher show.
Sure.
This is my favorite of them.
Okay. I will say what Rock of Ages does right. When you end a show with Don't Stop Believing, forget about it. Don't Stop Believing is like rock gold. Mm-hmm. Like, you do that and you do that well, like, no one can touch you. And Constantine Maroulis can blow in this show. Like...
Yeah, he's really good at the singing.
Those pipes are unstoppable, especially when you're singing this kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it was fine. I liked it. Sure.
Did you like Guys and Dolls, Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat?
Okay, let's talk about this mic problem. Okay.
The most iconic of all mic problems in 2009.
Mic problem.
Can I walk you through it?
Sure, yeah, do it.
Okay, so the number is announced. Titus Burgess, as Nicely Nicely Johnson, starts singing, and his mic is popping. Like, you can hear the sort of...
Yes, you can literally hear it.
We hear an offstage voice saying, "Am I going in with it? I'm going! I'm going!" Yeah. A man comes on the stage. Titus gets handed a handheld mic from a man in a tuxedo, and the audience applauds. This is very early in the number. That probably all takes place in the first...
It started the number.
12 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very fast.
Everyone's clearly watching him struggle to get these lines out and not being heard. And that's what the applause is for. It's like, finally, we can hear him. And then, God bless Titus Burgess, because A, he handles it like a champ.
He handles it like a champ. Like, you think this was supposed to happen.
I don't know if I go that far, but... He definitely...
No, but there is never... he's doing a lot of movement, right? He's climbing across chairs and he's running around the stage, and yet he does it all with this handheld mic that he was never supposed to be holding.
Correct. That is very true.
And makes it look like...
Effortless.
He had planned to be holding a handheld mic the entire time.
Boy has some mic technique, which is great. And he's single-handedly carrying this number.
I enjoy the Sergio Trujillo choreography. This is probably pretty early in Sergio's choreographic career, 2009.
Yeah.
I mean, he also choreographed Next to Normal this season, but this is...
He choreographed Next to Normal?
Sure did.
All those dance numbers in Next to Normal?
Babadoo, babadoo, babababab, psychopharmacologist, and I add up in something and something. All that stuff, that's all him.
Oh.
Yeah, this is like... In that time where Sergio was doing everything and getting nominated for nothing.
Yeah, that's true. I liked it.
This is a good version of Sit Down, You Rock on the Boat.
I would agree. I'd agree with that. Titus carries the whole thing, though.
Titus, thank you for being you.
Can't do this number without Titus.
Could you leave me? Dad, it's me. Could you let me go under?
Why can't you see?
Will you watch as I drown?
Okay. Next to Normal, You Don't Know I Am the One. Did you see, you saw this on Broadway, right?
I saw a reading of this starring Amy Spanger and Anthony Rapp in like 2005.
Wow.
Mary Faber was Natalie at the time. This is back when it was Feeling Electric.
Yeah.
So I would listen to the board mix from the reading of Feeling Electric, like circa 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this multiple times on Broadway with multiple casts. I did the show in a mini tour in 2012. Like,
oh,
I
work.
Like this show. I like this show. It is a good show. I like this show.
I saw it once off Broadway. I saw it at the Second Stage, complete with Costco number. And I regret not seeing it on Broadway, because I remember at the time I was like, I think I got it. And then it moved to Broadway and I was like, I saw it off Broadway. I'm fine. Again, an asshole. So that was my only experience with Next to Normal.
I will say that in my mind, part of the reason I pitched 2009 was because I had put a rivalry in my head of Next to Normal and
Billy
Elliot.
Sure.
Along the lines of Matilda and a Kinky Boots rivalry.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it was really a rivalry watching this, or if I just really liked Next to Normal and Billy Elliot.
That might have been a little bit of bias.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
If we were to choose a rivalry, it would definitely be between those two, because I don't think Shrek was
but
in
we
there.
Also,
I don't think Rock of Ages was
but
in
for
there.
For this miniseries, we specifically didn't choose seasons where there was a blowout in terms of nominations or wins. We didn't choose 2016.
Yeah.
Because we just talked about Hamilton for 2.5 hours.
Because LOL, yeah. Uh-huh.
You saw it once. You felt like you got it. I saw it 3 billion times and I have a lot of feelings. Did you like this performance? Is this a good performance? Did this sell you on Next to Normal?
I love this performance. This is the song that I remember from my watch at it. And it's the song... That I remember watching, what was it? When would this have been at Second Stage? Like in 2007, 2008?
Sounds right.
Where this is the song, both in this part of the show and in the reprise, where I just start crying. Because it's that song. I don't know if it's the emotional climax of the show, but it is an emotional climax of the show. And it gets me every time. Something about the way the chords and orchestration and all of the feels in the song of all three characters and the intensity the way they all line up, like I don't think anybody can watch this number and not be moved by this song. I question if you don't know what this show is about, is there that much of an impact? Because I wonder, like, I think it's a great commercial for me, but I've already spent my money and seen the show.
Mm-hmm. I actually think, I don't think it's the obvious choice, but I do think it's a good choice. Because what would the obvious choice be? The opening or the closing, right?
Sure.
Sort of something that says, like, here's everybody. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to tell, you know, the opening doesn't have a great end to it, right? It's Diana on the floor with all the bread. Like, how would you end that?
Yeah.
And the closing doesn't have a ton of meat to it. I feel like showing us sort of the moment where things take off in terms of storytelling is perhaps the smartest move.
Yeah.
And for as much as Alice has trouble keeping up with the band or hearing the band, I'm not sure what the problem is, but there are some points in the song where she is not with the band.
Yeah.
Where the band is not with her, I should say. I felt like her performance, I understood who this woman was, and I could see, seeing at home, being like, oh, that's interesting.
Oh, for sure.
I want to know more about that.
Well, I think, and that's where
the challenge with Diana is either you seem too unaffected by the circumstances and it doesn't feel like it has the emotional weight that would make it interesting to see, or you'd be watching someone overact and be a crazy person and you'd be like, oh, that doesn't feel realistic. Alice is writing this wonderfully fine line in her performance on the telecast, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think that we get to see why she won. When she wins, we're like, oh, based on that performance, I get it. I know. And I honestly don't think it matters that we don't know exactly what's happening in the scene, because the way they're performing it is compelling enough that it makes us want to go watch it.
Do you want to know another number where I don't know what's happening?
Go ahead.
Billy Elliot. I never saw Billy Elliot. I've never seen Billy Elliot. I've seen the movie.
So on Broadway HD, you should go watch Billy Elliot. Just get all of these streaming services that you should have already and go watch Billy Elliot.
I am too busy recording podcasts and watching the Tony Awards with you. I didn't like this. Tell me why I should like this.
I think you're cool. I think you're cool why you don't like this. It's a good moment in the show. It's a confusing moment in the show. It's a great watch, but it's a weird watch because I would say that even with the movie... Have you seen, you've seen the movie?
Yeah, I've seen the non-musical version of Billy Elliot.
So the movie of Billy, because there's the storyline of Billy trying to dance, and then there's the story of the union workers trying to unionize. And for the longest time, especially when I saw this for the first time, I was like, I don't understand why I identify with half of this show. I think Elton John's intro, had he nailed it, would have explained a lot more. When I heard, I was like, oh, that's a good, clear distinction of what the through line of Billy Elliot and connection to his father's story is, which I think is powerful if you know the show. If you don't know this show and you don't know the movie, this is a weird performance because you have no idea what's going on.
Yep, no idea.
The one thing that I think probably came into play here, in the same vein as my theory on the Shrek performance, again, it's all speculation. I have no fact on any of this. But because Billy started the show with Elton John singing Electricity and the three boys dancing Electricity, I was like, oh, they thought they had that covered. And so they chose to do something a little less commercial with their actual Tony performance.
Yeah.
Did it work? I don't know.
Okay, so this is I think about this as choreography from Peter Darling, who also gave us the movement in Matilda, which we know that you like, mm-hmm. Groundhog Day. The first half for me is a lot of a tween boy stomping his feet and saying, "Ack!"
Yeah.
Does it work for you, Aaron? Because I found it really repetitive and not very
Again,
engaging.
Because I know the show, it's as a Tony performance, no. Because you don't get it. We don't get it. I don't think this is... As a Tony performance, I don't think this is a successful performance. As a number in the show, when you see the show, because you should see it on Broadway HD, you understand what's happening. And arguably, this is what Tap is supposed to do. All contextually, it makes sense. Out of context, nah. This was look at us be evolved theater, because you already saw our press event at the beginning of the show. And all the kids who'd want to see the show have gone to bed already. And they saw the opening, so we're fine.
Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, steaming, flaxen, waxen. Give me down to there, hair, shoulder length or longer, here, baby, there.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You know what is a good Tony Award performance?
It's Hair.
It's Hair doing Hair. First off, let's talk about this ensemble. It is Jackie Burns, Andrew Cobert, Tomar Wilson. Your male swing room is Josh Lehman, J. Armstrong Johnson, and Michael James Scott. Imagine the dressing
room. I mean, the music echoing out of it is a party alone. Like,
okay, this is a good cast.
It's a fantastic
cast. It's like not a lot of choreography, but just the right of amount of staging to me. Like the whole opening tableau where they're all just like shaking their hair. Uh-huh. You're like, yeah, that's what Hair should look like.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they all spread out and they've got their own sort of moments and you get sort of that camera pan that we remember from 1998 from Ragtime where you see everybody sort of in their windows. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, this is great. Deserved audience interaction.
Oh my God. Yeah, this is just touching and breathing on faces pre-COVID. I was like, my first thought was like, oh my God, a COVID nightmare. No one could do this show right now.
Berkshire Theater Group is not doing, which is a bummer because there really was a point about 3 months into this where we all were getting haircuts or not getting haircuts that would have made
that would have made it
great
a great production of Hair for sure.
You could have saved a lot on your wig budget. And yet,
and nope,
COVID precautions.
Here we go.
To me, there's not a lot to this number other than like you write a really great song and you put really magnanimous performers to lead it, like Will Swenson and Gavin Creel, and you're like, okay.
And I will say I love, and tell me if, because I don't know Hair that well, but I feel like Hair is that beautiful number where it's on like the second tier of popularity. Like you got all like the really big, like Age of Aquarius, Let the Sun Shine In, all of those like everybody knows these songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hair, like the title song is not on that echelon, but it's a, like a level below. And so you feel like you're watching something new, but something you know at the same time.
And also it did a good job at, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the two nominated performances were Gavin Creel and Will Swenson.
Yeah.
So then you get, so it showcased the nominees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It showcased the nominees. It showcased the show.
Yeah. It made you want to see it.
Don't spoil our Yelp review, Aaron Alpana.
But it was, yeah, it was great. It was no notes. No notes here.
Let's give a Yelp review.
I feel like Yelp's going to yell at us for calling it a Yelp review.
Yelp does not care.
Yelp is not listening, for sure. Which performance made the show look better than it was, Mo?
I have to say Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
Because it was a good sit down, you rock in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not see that revival, but I heard it was not received well and closed quickly. So
yeah.
I'm just going to guess because I liked that number and buzz of the show was bad. Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
You?
I would say the same, but for a different performance. I would say the Guys and Dolls, actually, frankly, both the Guys and Dolls and the West Side Story, Tonight Medley in the opening. Because I actually thought you saw more of Sergio's choreography in that performance than you did in the actual number.
Oh, sure.
And so getting to see these two sort of iconic shows together hit me in all the right ways. And I was like, okay, I could believe in these shows.
Which performance made you want to buy a ticket?
West Side, hands down. I love a clean number. I love a clean number and I love an iconic number. And these both, it ticked both of those boxes.
I almost wrote West Side Story. I wrote Next to Normal.
Nice.
I think that this voices the score of the story, but yeah, but West Side Story.
I could buy Next to Normal too, except that I didn't buy a ticket because I saw it at I saw it at Second Stage.
I could buy Next to Normal, but only if it was an off-Broadway.
What speech moved you the most?
I liked Brian and Tom's for best score for Next to Normal.
Yes, that was a good one.
I thought they were very endearing, and I liked when Brian had a couple of quotes I liked. He said, "For all of you in this room and out there in America who are crazy enough to attempt an original musical, we salute you." And that feels very true. Yeah. That sort of feels like Next to Normal is sort of the most original musical you can get, right? It's not based on a book or a movie. Or a song book, right?
It's totally original. It won the Pulitzer, right?
Yeah. And he says later, if you're working on something you believe in, keep going no matter how long it takes. Mm. Maybe it's like just like COVID quarantine, but like that idea that like putting time into creating something, even if you're not seeing results, that actually feels like something that we can do in this moment. And that, I don't know, that just hit me in a way that was effective. So what did you think? What speech stood out to you the most, Aaron?
It was the Three Billies, which like we keep referring to the Three Billies as the Three Billies. So I'm going to say their names right now. David Alvarez, Kirill Kulish, and Trent Kowalik. Not even just we, like you and me, but like we, like the Broadway community, like groups them all together too many times and don't say their names out loud. I loved their Tony speech. Yes, they took too long, but I thought it was so... Of the people who were like on board with them, I was one of them because... They were so polite and just like so shocked and so taken aback that they were just like, no, you go, no, you go, no, you go, which I was like, oh, these guys. And then they thanked their dresser, which I was like, bravo, thanking your dresser. But what really hit me was that then in their Tony's stupor, they then thanked their Dolly Dingle Dance Studios. Mm. For those of you wondering, I refer to the Dolly Dingle Dance Studios as like your hometown dance studio. My Dolly Dingle studio is Marie Stinette Dance Studio in Campbell, California. But they literally on national TV started thanking their Dolly Dingle Dance Studios, which Trent's is Dorothy's School of Dance on Long Island, which I was like, does it get more Dolly Dingle than that? Kirill's was San Diego Academy of Ballet, which fine. Okay, it's an academy. It's not really a Dolly Dingle Academy. David then goes 92nd Y and ABT, which I was like, I mean, that's not really Dolly Dingle, but okay. It's like if Dolly Dingle and like Agnes DeMille had competing dance studios, that would be like the Agnes DeMille dance studio. Like, but that there's got to be more love to all of your Dolly Dingles. And that's why I love theirs.
Biggest surprise win, Aaron?
I didn't really have any.
Yeah, I didn't really have any either. So would you recommend watching the 2009 Tony Awards?
No. There were good moments, but when the broadcast can't get it together after the first like 10 minutes, I'm like, I gotta go. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah. I'm just like, because you'll just be pissed while you're watching the whole time.
Well, I think at this point, people should either watch Shrek the Musical or...
Billy Elliot on Billy Broadway Elliot. HD. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. Just go watch those instead.
All right. So in our last episode, part one of 2009, we randomly selected 1982. All right. So we'll be watching that next Tuesday for the episode.
We'll be watching that and talking about it next Tuesday.
Oh, right. That too. The Ensemblist was produced today by me, Mo Brady.
And by me, Aaron Albano. Special thanks to Wasif Sami for providing the background research for this Broadway season. There are two great ways you can be helping The Ensemblist right now. One is by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and the second is by becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/theensemblist.
Please follow The Ensemblist wherever you listen to podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or at bpn.fm, the home of Broadway Podcast Network. You can also follow us on Instagram. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Until next time!
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.